T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hello. How are you?
Hello. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, I am so excited to be having you. Congratulations on the opening of Dope.
Yeah, big weekend. I'm still standing somehow.
Are you exhausted? Opening. Are you like running all over the place?
Yeah, it's a lot, but I have an awesome team. So like big shout out to Ashley and Bex and the whole crew that we have out here. Like definitely takes a village to run a business. And I think business owners often overlook how important it is to hire the right people. But if you've got a good team behind you, you know, it can change the game. So
no kidding.
I'm super tired, but I'm very like happy and proud, and all those feelings sort of like balance me out to just like neutral Monday.
No kidding. Well, you know what? Yeah. I do want to come back to your awesome team because I met some of them.
Cool.
And your hiring process, I'm super interested in.
Yeah.
But I want to know. So I know, thank you for clearing out the days before you're traveling back to Cali. Where are you from?
In San Francisco. Yeah, okay. Going back to San Francisco. I've been out in Vegas since November, getting ready for the store. But yeah, ready to get back to the Bay. I have friends. I'm like, oh, I need my like normal life back sometimes. But Dope life has been pretty cool out here. So.
And you leave like in days, right?
Yeah, Wednesday.
Wednesday.
So like tomorrow's my plan to pack up my life.
I was going to say, like, thanks for, like, not packing and coming to do this with me. So.
Yes, yes.
Oh, my goodness. So, okay, so we were just talking about your crew. Can you please tell me, this is one of my favorite things, whenever we were having our discussion the other day at the media opening of Dope. I think that it is so cool, one, that you are so passionate about the mental health of your employees. So can you tell me a little bit about how the process was? Well, actually, what's the right verbiage for it? Like,
yeah,
you
the
have
hiring
them,
process.
Yeah,
totally.
Like, or to even get
onboarding,
them certified for,
yeah,
like,
training process. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think starting back with like the actual hiring process to what we do around mental health and addiction with Dope, in general, trying to raise awareness about it, raising money for it, and then the sort of mental health aspect to our benefit package, if you will.
Yeah, right.
Those things were all really important to correlate to our, people interviewing for the positions. But it's amazing what research people will do before they come to a job interview. So one of my interview questions was like, what makes you want to work here? What makes you so excited about working for Dope? And I mean, we interviewed almost 100 people for this, our hourly staff, which was a total of 16 people hired, I believe.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, go through 100 people. And I think there were 15 or so that didn't mention mental health and addiction, you know, our Dope for Hope, as we call it, kind of world.
Out of 100.
As a reason why they want to work for the company. Yeah, out of 100. So it was like we had a serious outpour of just like people are so hungry for companies that care about them,
right,
as people, and companies that care about making a difference in the world. And it was awesome to see that just, you know, we launched Dope for Hope in September of last year. So the traction that that's been able to build up and how clearly it's resonating with people is really, really cool.
Of 2017 or 2018?
Of 2018. We
oh my
Dope
gosh, you haven't
September.
Even.
Yeah.
That is it?
Yeah.
And you're already like kicking so much ass right now. I am so impressed. Oh my gosh.
So we launched Dope in April of 2017, but I had done all this sort of philanthropy here and there, just this like, you know, I want to give back. I want to do something for the community, but it didn't really have a true focus. It wasn't like really ironed in on one thing. And then in September of 2017, I got my first sort of brick and mortar. It was like a kiosk, you know, 10 by 10,
oh, yeah,
but it was mine.
Yeah.
I was so excited. So on that date, our opening day was actually my 2-year sobriety anniversary. So we put out a discount thing that was like, if you say it's dope to be sober at checkout, you get 20% off. And the response we got was just like incredible. So I was like, you know, I need to kind of like put something around this, mm-hmm, and like, you know, have it make a little bit more finite sense. So yeah, actually you're right then. That was September of 2017. Time flies.
It does, right?
So yeah, that was the fall of 17. And then yeah, last year we sort of put more more structure around it just through the year, kind of like, what do we really want it to look like? And yeah, our Dope for Hope flavor in the store took shape, and you know, what will that be? So we have a cookie dough flavor in our storefronts where 100% of the proceeds are donated to a different nonprofit. And because of the Dope for Hope getting focused around mental health and addiction, Now we specifically choose nonprofits working in that area.
So what kind of effect and like whenever you were like reaching, I don't know, I like what point in your sobriety was it like a light bulb moment for you that you were like, you know, I finally have worked on myself and now I want to kind of like teach other people or like help other people or like extend this massive amount of like an extreme gesture, literally to help others in a baking sense. You know what I mean? Like in a way that people can enjoy something sweet and, you know, kind of for some self-love.
Totally. Yeah. I think it tied together better than I even knew it would when I first got started. I was just like, you know, finally not drinking and getting sober really opened up the doors to like what makes Kelsey happy again. So that moment you're talking about where it's like, hey, I got to get me right first.
Right.
That was a good stretch. You know, it's September of 2015 when I got sober. So I think the next 6 months were lots of like figuring out who I am, what I want to do, what makes me happy.
And just probably trying to find a balance of you can be happy and totally sober and not use that as a crutch.
Like you don't need alcohol to have a good time. And
absolutely.
I did lots of learning of like, okay, you can go on a first date and not drink. And like, I had people ask me, you know, like, how will you ever like, you know, get the first kiss or something? Like you need that liquid courage to like kiss someone.
I'm Isn't like, that so weird that like we're almost like conditioned to feel like even just like I just moved here in July of last year. Weird that it's going to be about a year now. But, you know, with those thoughts of like, what do you do as an adult that's not like alcohol or going out for drinks related? Like
constantly,
you have to totally like, shift your mind frame.
Yeah. How will I like, what would we do to hang out? Like everything hanging out is like, let's meet up for drinks or whatever. And it's not to say that I don't have a friend group that often wants to meet at a brewery or like go to a bar or something, but I definitely have a lot more extended options. Like we do a lot more other activities because I'm the one to kind of prompt it, you know, and remind
absolutely.
Them, like, oh, you guys want to do this new mini golf place that opened up, or do you guys want to go like bowling, or like, do you want to walk around this new like graffiti mural, like area in SF? Like there's, you know, there's tons of stuff to do, museums, like go on a lot of hikes, like outdoor activities are really fun. And yeah, if you have some friends that like want to have a drink, they can. But it's pretty refreshing when even those friends that do drink go through like some cool like sober activity, if you will, air quotes. You know, like some sober activity, they're not drinking. Like they have such a good time, and you know don't have to feel hungover afterwards.
So, shout out to me right now after St. Patty's Day. I'm sitting here thinking about joining your sober life right now. Goodness gracious.
It's just interesting. I think like our society makes it very difficult to recognize that you have a problem. So it took me, I mean, realistically like 6-7 years longer than it should have to get sober. Like I tried to get sober at 21. That should be a sign you're having a problem if you feel
21
that uncomfortable or that embarrassed about what you've done or what's happened. And, you know, the tickets I'd gotten or hospitalizations, like it was so like normal, to be honest. I went to ASU and I party school or whatever, like every college is like that.
Yeah.
And I was amongst good company that had all been in the hospital over the past month or what, you know, it was like you weren't even surprising your friends saying like, oh yeah, I got another ticket last weekend at that party or whatever, like for being intoxicated. Like,
I think that's really important. I think that's so important that you're saying that because we are a binging culture. How old are you? I think we are.
I'm 28.
28. Mm-hmm. Same age. I'm 27. I'll be 28 this year. We're a binging culture.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is.
It's in everything too. Everything to excess.
Netflix.
Yeah.
Let's go out and get massive, copious amounts of food and just like, you know, die from gluttony. Like, you know, it really is. So, but I'm
Which is filling some void, right? If you want to make some parallel to like what's going on in society, it's like, what are we trying to like fill or mask or numb a bit, you know?
Yeah.
And whether it's shoving all the food you can in your face or shopping until you drop or, you know, just everything has this culture around excess. And it's really refreshing to like simplify things down a little bit and not need to overindulge all the time.
Do you think that was one of the biggest things, like we keep talking about light bulb moments, like one of the biggest light bulb moments for you was I don't need excess? Did you also take a lot of things that you had excess of in other parts of your life too and reduce and minimalize as well?
Yeah. I mean, right when I first got sober, I was like, okay, I'm going to be vegan too.
Yeah,
and I'm
not
going to drink coffee. And
full clean lifestyle.
No fake animal fur or something. You know, it's just like, okay, the animal fur was a joke. But like, I really did try sort of the vegan life and everything. And then it like paired off really nicely into just sort of a balance with that. Like, I often cook vegan at home, but I love butter, so you'll find our cookie dough is filled with butter.
Right.
So yeah, I think like there's definitely stuff that was like, okay, figure out what the vice is for you in your life. So those moments of like, hey, ultra simplify everything down, and then like figure out what pairs back on well for you. Like alcohol was not going to work in any context for me, so that stayed at zero. But like, hey, the vegan life, okay, I like pulled pork sandwiches occasionally and it doesn't negatively affect me, and I can find a balance there.
Moderation, so, for
yeah,
sure.
Like, yeah, like everything in moderation, and I think that's too often overlooked. So, yeah, I got to do a lot of soul searching on like what were the reasons why I was going to alcohol and trying to find ways to better my mental health and figure out how I could be happy just being me. There's a lot of pressure in the society to be someone else. We all scroll Instagram and we're, you know, so jealous of this girl's boobs or this guy's six-pack.
Oh, girl, you're preaching to the choir.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's crazy. Like, and it just, it won't stop unless you stop it. So I think deep down, you got to dig and like find what you love about yourself and make that list, say it every morning.
Yeah.
All those things like really make a difference when we're in this constantly flooded world with other imagery that makes you feel less than.
And you just touched on this too, and I think that's so important. Mental health and addiction, and you're pairing with the Chippendales. That what is it? The Chiptastic. Chiptastic.
Yes.
Almost called it Chipaholic, which would have been an awful. maybe not
we,
the best
we
of
thought
names.
About that name. But yeah, we did Chiptastic because we ended up choosing the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention.
Yes.
So,
and all of these things tie in together.
Yeah.
And I'm doing the walk, and I think you guys are going to be doing that too, April 6th.
Yep.
It's Out of the Dark. Mm-hmm. And I just think that is so important, one, to end the stigma, two, to like be open and being able to have a conversation about your mental health and how that ties into those, you know, those massive suicidal, manic, depressant thoughts. Mm-hmm. And for you guys to be pairing with that and having your employees trained on how to, you know, notice trigger signs and, mm-hmm. or, you know, somebody like doing like silent cries for help within your store is amazing. And I think that more companies need to do that tenfold.
Absolutely. It's like a personal journey of mine, a mission of mine this year to try and get at least 10 other companies to sign on with some sort of mental health policy in their company. We have that element where it's mental health certification for our staff, which the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention actually provides suicide like detection training, if you will. So they have a form of training that's offered to our staff. And then there's another service that offers truly like mental health certification. Just if we've got all these staff members coming in and our company's going to be talking about it so loudly and proudly, I want them to feel really comfortable talking about all of the variations of that and knowing how to engage in a conversation. Like at the grand opening, for example, amazing that my message and our story has touched so many people. So we had some coming to the store and like almost brought tears to my eyes. She walked up and said she, you know, almost never leaves her house, but she saw what I said and what I'm doing about mental health and, you know, wants to come out and had shared, you know, what she's been dealing with personally and the struggles she's gone through. And it was like, wow, like if we can make someone who rarely leaves their home
walk out of the door.
Right. Like come out. And she brought her two children and they sat and they played games and, you know, it was just awesome. Like she was, it was really awesome. It made me feel like that moment of even if you just touch one person, even if you just affect one person.
That's
out there,
one life that you possibly could be
worth it. Yeah.
Almost like in a sense of like, and I'm sure you're probably more humble than this thought for yourself, but I'm going to say it. You're possibly even saving that person's life. You know what I mean? Like that's a life that you're touching to a point of, you know, you don't know where manic thoughts can take you. Yeah. And if she's isolating or if, you know, he's isolating or
just
whatever.
Just like one
is,
glimmer of not feeling as
absolutely,
alone. If
that's
that could
all it
change
takes.
It. The American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, they, I need to learn their acronym faster. It's like AFSP.
Yeah, right.
AFSP. They came in droves, you know, over the grand opening, which was awesome to have their support out there. And one of them let me know she'd gone to a high school, I believe it was, and shared, you know, they've got sort of a program for teens just to talk about it, right? Like talk about how you're feeling. And one of the kids had said something like, you know, this is silly or like, this is stupid. You know, when you're in high school, you're like,
absolutely,
I'm too cool for school, whatever.
Yes.
Well, turns out she finds out the next week that one of the kids in that class went and asked to see a counselor and told their parents, you know, I think I need help. And my gosh, you know, like if she feels like, whatever all the big macho kids said in the class, that one kid in there that really needed to hear that, I mean, he reached out for help, and now that's a high school kid we might not lose. And we're losing way too many.
Way too many. Too many of our friends, too many kids. you know, there's a, we can go off on a tangent of that in and of itself. But I mean,
yeah.
I love the openness, the ending the stigma that you have. And it's more situations like this and more conversations like this that will help people feel okay to talk about it, because sometimes you don't want to bother people.
Yeah.
You don't want to even just go to your family in fear of like, oh, they're going to be, you know, too dramatic, in a sense of like a high schooler, right? You're thinking, oh my gosh, like if I do this, then mom's going to worry, dad's going to worry. I don't want them to worry, but it's, but really they need to be,
and
you know?
We have such a chance to change this family dynamic as we all turn into mothers and fathers out there. The conversations we allow to happen in our household as children will frame the rest of their life. Like, it really changes the game to bring these things up at a young age. It's similar to, you know, when did you have the sex conversation as a kid?
I totally agree with that.
We gotta have the mental health conversation with kids, because we're waiting too long, and then it seems like the stigma is so real and like it's something taboo to talk about. You know, 1 in 2 Americans will be diagnosed with a mental health disorder in their lifetime.
One in two.
And I feel like that number will be even higher if you really got down to it, because how many of us are too scared to get the diagnosis? That's diagnosed. That's willing to talk about it to some, you know, professional out there that was able to log this. So imagine how many are just feeling unnecessarily sad, or, you know, they're confused. They don't know why they're feeling like this. And, you know, they need to know that it's okay. You feel the way you do. And there are people out here to support you through it. We're all going through way too much in life to try and make it alone. So,
yeah. And, you know, and I'm listening to you say that and too scared to say it. But I think that a lot of us are also so naive to not check in on our friends whenever they're doing silent cries for help. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, also, let's take it to a step further and being like, if you're noticing somebody on your Instagram story or tweeting or 100%. On Facebook, there are little cues that you can be learning. And, you know, just like how your employees, they're, training to spot these kind of things. Yeah. We as friends and we as family members can't be so naive.
Yeah.
To
think you're too cool to reach out.
Absolutely.
The friend you haven't talked to since high school starts posting some like dark pictures, you know, dark comments, whatever it is. Like, it wouldn't kill you to reach out and say,
hey, how are you doing?
Nice.
All it takes. And maybe they don't respond, but to know that somebody's in your corner and that they're willing to listen is, I think, a huge step, and at least a large open room that we have got to fill a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because people just feel so alone, and it just takes that one text, hey, I'm here. I don't know if you feel like talking, because sometimes you don't, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just like, hey, how are you? Are things okay? You know, I'm in your corner. Here's my number. If it's been somebody who you haven't had contact with forever, that's the great thing about social media is it's become everyone's diaries. We're so connected but disconnected at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, just like little touches.
Totally. And I feel like we need less shunning of the true diary moments on Facebook. Like, you know, it's now all like, oh, overshare. Like, you shouldn't have posted those things. That's private. Keep it to yourself, this and that. And like, I think it's really interesting, because if someone's feeling obliged to share that, they must not have anyone else to share something that personal with. You know, if it's one of those moments where you're like, oh gosh, did they need to put that on Facebook? It's like, maybe they didn't have anyone else to talk to about it. So those old days of, everyone used to write like a 3-paragraph entry on today I feel ...
Right.
Like, that's still happening for some people. That's still their outlet. So, you know, I say, let it be what it needs to be for each person. And this is a really interesting flashback to my life in tech before Dope. I used to work for Intel, and we were working on a campaign called Hack Harassment, to end online harassment. And like, one element we'd sort of looked at in this was like, what if people could sort of raise a hand on Facebook, put some marker on their account that was like, I'm an open ear, like open door kind of policy.
That would be amazing.
Like, someone who's very like interested or comfortable with just hearing from strangers, their, you know, long lost friends or whatever. It could be on your friend account, but gosh, I got 1,200 people. I don't know them all personally anymore. Yeah. Haven't seen them since high school or whatever.
I'm not the same person I was 10 years ago. Yeah. I'm sure they aren't either.
Totally.
So.
But like, we once had some connection. That's how we're friends here on Facebook. And my door's open if you want to call or if you need to talk.
That would be the coolest feature.
Yeah, something little like that. So, maybe I'll nudge someone over at Facebook again.
Yeah, right? I mean, that would be one of the coolest features. And I'm even sitting here thinking, like, from business perspective at this point, like, wow, what, in a culture that is so pro right now, I feel like this is the time to 100% do that with all of the positive movements towards, like, just self-love and self-care.
Yeah,
Yeah. Oh, that would be so neat.
Friend care.
Yeah, we right? need more of that. Or, you know, and
that's
I'm,
what Facebook would call it.
Yeah.
Friend care.
Friend care. I'm here.
Oh, that's great.
Which is a little flag. No, yeah. That's really neat. And I really, once again, a million times over, just so appreciate what you are doing for the large picture. With cookie dough as your starter, which is amazing, by the way.
A little act of self-love helps make adulting bearable.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Just dig in, have some fun. But yeah, I think it's important to share a sweet message with a sweet dessert. So yeah, we're always saying life is raw. Cookie dough helps.
Yeah. It's so cute. Yeah. Really, that's really cute.
So get a scoop and yeah, share some time with friends. We've got these conversation cards in the store. It's fun to see people come in and actually talk, not just... You know, you can post your picture, but
do you have some of those conversations? Do you remember any of the cards?
Yeah, say like, what are you most proud of? Or when was the last time you felt like FML? And you know, when was the last time you felt hashtag blessed? Like those kind of things, like good and bad, just real. And so it encourages you to answer honestly, you know, no judgment zone, that kind of thing. So,
yeah. And you were telling me whenever we were at your grand opening that you had like a bunch of teenagers. You have these awesome, almost like bleacher-like
like
stairs.
High school bleachers,
and then you had all of these high school kids just like phones down. I'm sure they probably took a bunch of pictures before that. Let's be real. I did too whenever I was there. But they had their phones down and they were looking and being active in these conversation cards.
Yeah, so refreshing.
Living in the moment.
Families coming through, enjoying it. Like, living in the moment a little bit more and talking about it. One of them was like, what do you love most about yourself?
And oh, I love that question.
Like, I was working on my laptop actually, like on the top bleacher, and I could hear them down below. So we had asked like the, it must have been like 14, 15 year old girl, and she's just kind of like shied away, like didn't want to answer it at first, you know. And he egged her on, and eventually, you know, she said, I think she said she loves how empathetic she can be, something like that. So I was just like, what a sweet
to know
sweet
that
girl.
About yourself, right? I think at 15 or 14, it would have been like. These new shoes I got.
I
love these new shoes
it was
I got.
So
whatever.
Sweet.
Such a little, like, yeah, what? Like, that is the sweetest thing. And I really am very interested to see how this generation behind us grows with their passion and so many things that they have right now for like ending gun violence. And, you know, they're just so affected by so many things, especially with the internet and how we were just talking about with Instagram, how if you don't get the likes, your value is next to nothing in their mindset. So
psychologists have literally shown the tie to like the ding of our phone and getting dopamine like released. Like
really?
We are so hooked in. I mean, think about like those Pavlov dog, like the bell rings and you start to salivate. Like we're getting positive responses from the ding of our phone. Like that is scary. So like you go on your social media free week and stuff and you have like a loss of dopamine. You're not getting that like hit that you've been expecting. And so you're sad when your phone isn't going off. Like it's crazy. We really need some thought behind the amount of time going into it. I love Apple's new feature for screen time.
I was just about to ask you.
Yeah, if people don't look at that, it's really interesting. Like,
have you ever looked at your screen time?
Totally, yeah. Mine's pretty high, but I am proud to say it's higher on Slack and email than it is on social media.
How many hours are you
like
on
5 hours a week.
That's about mine, too. I think I'm like, one time it said 7. I was like, oh, you
know,
hot.
Big week. Yeah, like, if I'm like sick for a week, it's like 3 hours. Yeah. But yeah, it's mostly like I'm always on the go, so I'm doing my email and talking to my employees on Slack. But yeah, social media is good awareness. Like awareness is really important for that. Think with anything, right?
Right.
Like with alcohol, like, hey, if you think you might have an issue with drinking, like start to take a log. I look back in my diary, like back when I was, you know, still in the throes of it. And it's very interesting to watch the progression. And eventually I was just like, holy crap, I've written this before. Like, I don't want to write about last night. We've gone through this. You know what I mean? Like, and
so you were writing down like your going out nights or you're meaning like you were talking about like
any
you were
night, any morning you wake up and you're like, my God, I regret what I did. I wish I didn't do what I did last night. Those kind of things. I was really keeping a pretty good track of like, Kelsey, can't believe what I did last night again. You know, here's what happened. And detailing it. And it just eventually was like, oh my God, like this is, you're sitting on a record of like all of these.
All of the redundancies. Yes.
And it's like insanity is trying this again. You know, I had written through I think I lasted like 4 months sober at 21. And, you know, my last page of that was like, of that 4 months was saying how excited I was to try and drink again, how I thought I was going to find a balance this time and yada, yada, yada. 3 months later, I had blacked out again and, you know, just awful.
Back into it.
Right, back into it from, you know, the day one of drinking. I was like, okay, I can have a half glass of wine. And I was like learning what it felt like just to be buzzed and not like diving in too deep. But if you have a problem with alcohol, you have a problem with alcohol and it doesn't leave. And it just slowly crept back and, you know, 3 months later. And so when I got to the, you know, big event that led me to this decision to get sober for good, it was like, I don't want to do the temporary again. We've seen that. Like, I had the record of how that ends. So I think it's interesting to sort of like just keep a track, be more aware of how you're feeling with whatever your vice is. And eventually, if it's bad enough, you know, you'll see that it's time to call it quits.
You know what? And two, I'm sitting here thinking about the binging, how that's our current culture, how you go online and everyone's like, you know, you're finding on Twitter right now, like unpopular opinion or popular opinions on, you know, drinking addiction. Mm-hmm. And if you go through, you see everyone's like, you know, three drinks and you're a lightweight or, you know, or like things like that. And it's almost just like shaming people into drinking more.
Totally. I mean, or talk about the person who's pressure. Like, hey, I don't think I'm going to drink tonight. Oh, what's wrong? Saying what's wrong to someone, saying they don't want to drink tonight, be it them being the decision to be sober forever, or they're just trying to take a night off or not in the mood to drink, or they just don't love to drink a lot, you know? But the societal like norms we put on it by continuing to say like, oh, what's wrong with you? Or why not? What's going on? Are you okay? Or like that they're being a party pooper or something, you know, like you can't possibly join in on the fun.
Oh, yeah.
Without the alcohol is like just reinforcing that stigma around alcoholism.
So I used to be a bartender and I would find that my depression would heighten at like some kind of crazy anxiety ridden level for a week after, 2 weeks after of like blacking out, mm-hmm. which I don't black out anymore. But that's just because getting older, I don't have any sense of need to feel like I need to be blacking out because, to be quite frank, I don't hang out with those people anymore who are constantly shots.
Totally. The crowd changes everything.
It totally does. And that was just where I was in my life. Love those people. They're great. But I'm so much healthier. Mm-hmm. Whenever you start making those shifts and changes in your life and you're like, oh, I was gaining weight. You know, the scariest of what did I do? Mm-hmm. I have lapse of memory for like 8 hours. You know, that we used to call them the Sunday scaries. You'd wake up on Sunday and be like, oh, what the hell?
Yeah.
And sometimes those scaries were a lot worse than others that would, you know, throw you into massive depressant states and you would like not talk to anybody or like too embarrassed whenever somebody would bring it up.
Yeah.
But then the cycle starts all over again.
Exactly. Then suddenly like 3 days was enough to forget it, which is another reason why writing this stuff down helps so much. Cause like
it really is 3 days, isn't it? Like,
it's like
whatever.
3 or 4 days. And then on Wednesday, someone's like, yo, you want to go to happy hour? And you're like, all right. And then all of a sudden I'm like in some dude's bed. Like, it was just, it would happen so fast. It was like, you forget so quick. When I finally, you know, in 2015 got sober, I was like, I'm going to go through the full haul here. And I made like a list, like it's in notes on my phone still. And I read it every year anniversary for the most part. But it's all of those events, like this time hospital, this time lost my purse, this time, you know, slept with that guy, like the full gamut of all those, like, dang, I never want to do this again moments. And then I kept doing them. But yeah, it was like 35 things on that list.
35.
35 like traumatic nights of like, you should really never do this again. So
and it took you to 35. How crazy is that?
It's insane.
It wasn't even like one or two.
And your
that's
brain,
human nature.
Your brain like corrects so fast to just be like, well, I'd probably be okay. Like, look, today I could be like, hey, it's been, you know, almost 4 years. Maybe I could do it. Maybe I could just, I mean, I got a boyfriend now. We're fine. I'm a business owner. It'd be okay. I could just have wine with dinner. Maybe I only have wine. And it's like, no. Like, we have gone through this. So those lists are, like, super helpful for me to look back at. And I'm just, like, reminded how bad it had gotten and how many times I tried to make it not happen again and failed. So I think that's – it's not beating yourself in the ground or anything. It's just really, like, brain training.
Yeah.
To be, like, no, you can't have your little three-day turnaround cycle like before. You know, it's not going to be the same.
Do you still hold on to your list?
Yeah. Yeah, I've got it. I read it every September. Yeah.
Is that good reminder? That's for your anniversary.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like an interesting thing. But I'm so proud of how far I've come. Interestingly, my boyfriend and I are going to take a vacation. I haven't left the country since I started dope, so I'm really excited.
That'll be fun.
Really fun. We're going to be going to Barcelona. He's got some family in Gibraltar, so we're flying through Barcelona. And Barcelona has a really interesting past with me. In college, I went to study abroad there, 18, full swings of drinking, you know, at ASU. And finally, wow, I'm going to be in a country where I can
drink legally.
Bars,
yes.
Go to clubs.
It's because it's 18 there, right, in Spain.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I came to in a park at about 4 in the morning, completely disoriented. This was like my second night there. Had no idea what had happened. I had been raped and went to the hospital in Spain listening to, you know, all these doctors talk in Catalan, which is not the Spanish I had studied in school, you know,
right.
Just a very awful morning. Flew home, didn't end up getting to do the study abroad. I've never actually shared this publicly, but I think it's important to note. I flew home. So my study abroad dreams had been crushed, you know, thanks to
this awful person. I almost said the F word, but that's how, you know, like, what the hell? People to even think, oh God.
So, and I had totally put myself in this situation. I know people make their own decisions and that person is an awful person who shouldn't have taken advantage of someone who was completely 100. Inebriated. It was that same thing of like, oh my God, if I hadn't blacked out at 6 p.m. or whatever it was, you know, I would have made it. Fast forward to like 24 years old, September of 2015. It was almost 4 years to the date from that study abroad trip. I'm back in Barcelona for a business trip. Been in a relationship for like 4 years and started drinking at like 11 a.m. thanks to Marriott's platinum gift of a half bottle of wine. Shame, Marriott. Sorry. Not dissing you, but it wasn't good for me. So yeah, it was like 11 in the morning. I start that. I meet some coworkers at the pool and yet again, I'm in Barcelona after having just left my, you know, ex now, but boyfriend at the time, saying how this was going to be different. I'm different now. I've got it under control.
Do you think
the drinking
though,
is going to be fine?
I was going to say, let's tap into this for a second though. Do you think subconsciously that's probably why you started drinking? Like, did you feel like maybe like your anxiety was like at that point that like, or did you really trust in yourself enough
to make it through that trip without it? Yeah. I think foolishly, I really thought I had it under control. I thought I was going to be okay. I typically didn't drink alone. I was always a social drinker.
Oh, yeah.
I was sort of scared to see what would happen if I drank by myself. And this was a business trip. And, you know, you're not alone usually on business trips. And they were notoriously pretty bad for me because it was sort of this, like, semi-vacation.
Yeah.
Booze is all paid for by work kind of thing. And, like, everyone knows those just go crazy. Like, so, yeah, it was, you know, yet again, just diving right into that. I remember virtually nothing after, like, 4 p.m., 5 p.m. I had slipped and hit my head trying to shower for dinner plans
after the
pool. Basically gave up on getting ready because I was so drunk and went back to the bar. And then it came to at, like, 3 in the morning, and I was in some stranger's apartment and, you know, the story. So that was the morning I just said, I am so done with this. I am such a better woman than what this has shown me to be and how insane that the city has like cursed me twice. Like, you know, I've really have just proved to myself 4 years apart that I still can't handle alcohol. And boyfriend broke up with me. You know, I made it through this 7-day business trip. And that morning was the first morning waking up in Barcelona. And I said, I will never have a sip of alcohol again. And I haven't. I went to an English speaking AA meeting that morning in Spain. And I have not touched alcohol since.
Oh, I'm so proud. So, that is so awesome.
We're going to Barcelona now in like a week, and it's going to be a very different experience. So in a way,
why
I'm
do you
like,
keep going back to Barcelona?
Right? So he's got family in Gibraltar. I was like, okay, we'll do it. We'll go through. But yeah, I actually think it's kind of a nice full circle thing to go back now
and be sober.
Totally sober. And
for some closure.
Yeah. Yeah. And not have Barcelona sort of be this weird floating, like creepy city in my brain where I just have so many negative memories there. I'm excited to sort of create some fresh ones. Yeah.
You know what? And thank you. I know that you absolutely did not have to share that with me. I appreciate you opening up to me.
Yeah.
There are so many people, I included, who have had that same story in different variations, different forms. You know, there are so many men and women.
Yeah.
Men don't even speak about it, how often it happens to them. I actually had a friend of mine, I posted something the other day. You know, and it was me saying like, you know, if you did it when you're drunk, you wanted to do it sober. And my thought process, I was thinking cheating. I was thinking, you know, like I if you are cheating on your significant other, there's a reason why you're doing it when you're drunk. Mm-hmm. That's where my mind was. And this friend of mine said, no, I don't believe that at all. I was raped. This is a 6'5" gigantic man coming to me saying this. And he's like, no, I was raped whenever I was drunk. Are you saying that, you know, I wanted to have that happen to me if I was sober? And, you know, and I didn't even think of it in that space. But, you know, for him, and he literally hashtagged me too. I was like, oh my gosh, like this is a friend of mine. I just offended him. Mm. Had no even, like, just total ignorant, just like thought of, you know, because I've had that happen to me too. So many people have. Yeah. And to think that, like, I had stepped on that so sensitive shell for him, one, courage, like, applause for him to even, like, being speaking about it. But there's just so many people who have had that happen that for you to say it is maybe going to help somebody else, like, talk about it.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, the beauty of, like, the Me Too movement, you know, you saw every woman in your life come out with some story of a man or woman inappropriately doing something to them. So, yeah, I think more people need to share it, and I hope it helps someone.
You know,
feel a little less alone.
A little less alone.
Alcoholism and all of it. It's like, we could talk about our demons, because chances are somebody listening is going through the same thing, and you want them to have a little glimmer that somebody else has made it through.
Through and with such success.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Which, with such freaking success, the opening of your brand new store, your baby in Vegas.
Yep.
We hope that you come and visit more often.
Of course.
How frequently are you going to be coming to
visit?
I'll
be back every 2 weeks or so. Yeah, for the first few months. And then maybe every month for a little bit after that. So, yeah, but it'll be pretty frequent in the beginning. Made some good friends out here.
And it's I'm just moved here, so I want to say it right. It's Millennial Mile, right?
Miracle Mile.
Miracle
Shops.
Mile.
Millennial Mile would be a sick name.
Yeah, right. Millennial Mile. Miracle Mile Shops.
Dope is turning it into the Millennial Mile. That's funny.
No kidding.
Yeah, Miracle Mile Shops. It's inside Planet Hollywood. It's, I think, the last parking garage that's free on the Strip. So locals come through. We've got a locals discount. I think we're doing 10% off for all locals.
And what do you do? Do you show your ID in order to do that?
Yeah, just the locals ID.
Man, I got to get my ID switched.
Students,
mine still says Kentucky, and I'm just like losing.
You can show us your, like, some Amazon shipment to your house
or
something.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah.
And it's the Chiptastic.
Yep, Chiptastic is potato chips, chocolate chips, and peanut butter chips in a cookie dough. So a little sweet and salty, but you get to do some good. 100% of proceeds go to the AFSP.
That's what I tried, and it was so good. That, you know, because I saw the potato chips, and I don't know what it was about it, but I was like, oh, that looks like a absolute treat. Something about the sweet and salty
and
just paired perfectly in my mind, and it was without fail so delicious. So absolutely go and try it.
Goes well, full espresso bar, and you know, with my sobriety, it made sense to do a mocktail bar. So we have a booze-free bar menu with non-alcoholic wine and mocktails, and it's a pretty fun spot to hang out. Got games, Jenga, and foosball and stuff. So a good spot to chill on the Strip. I know days in Vegas for visitors or whatever can get kind of long, where they're like, hey, I wish I had somewhere to just chill for the day. Come through.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. We're gonna post it up on KLUC.com, and you'll be able to find it all over the place, radio.com app as well. But thank you
Amazing.
A million times over.
Thanks for having
everything
me.
That you do for our community now and the Bay. And hopefully you're going to take over the world.
World cookie dough domination coming soon.
One chocolate chip at a time.
That's it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.